Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Hey there. Welcome back to the pod. I am super excited for the interview this week because we are talking about where evidence-based nutrition guidelines and breaking free of dieting, improving your relationship with food and your body intersect, which, as you guys know, is exactly my philosophy here on the Real Talk with Dana podcast and what I try to do every single day in my own philosophy and my own approach to nutrition, both with my clients and on social media and everything like that. So because of that, I am super pumped to have Victoria Myers on the podcast today, who is a registered dietitian nutritionist whose goal is to inspire and educate her community to understand eating intuitively and how that connects to digestive and hormonal health, to respect their bodies and to let go of the perfectionist mindset. So Victoria's information is catered to women with an unhealthy obsession with eating healthy, as Victoria herself once struggled with this and now helps others break free from the health and wellness world that has basically become super diet-centric and very disordered. So the focus of today's episode is about how the behaviors we engage in around food and exercise, whether they be chronic diet, eating, disordered eating, restricting our food, or even eating disorders can impact us on a deep physiological level, and how those behaviors can manifest in physical symptoms like digestive and hormonal issues. And then Victoria and I are talking about how we can approach these clinical manifestations from a non-restrictive, weight-inclusive approach so that you don't get caught back up in the diet cycle that kind of got you here in the first place. So without any updates or any further ado, let's get straight to the episode with Victoria, because I know you guys are going to love it today. Victoria, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm super pumped to have you here. I'm really excited for the listeners to hear someone who also takes this middle ground approach, which is not a loud enough voice in the clinical nutrition / disordered eating and eating disorder recovery communities, right? So I'd love to get started by talking about, how did you get here? Tell us about your personal health journey and the biggest influences on your relationship with food and your body growing up.
Yeah, well, first of all, Dana, thank you so much for having me. I'm a really big fan of your work, so I'm honored to be on the podcast. But yeah, for me, I feel like my story starts way back in childhood, and I'm not obviously going to go into all the like detailed stories of that, but I just never had a normal relationship with my body and really ever with food. And I remember at a really young age, always kind of seeing foods as good as bad from a really young age and seeing my body as good and bad and all of those ways. I think a lot of us as women were kind of affected by this, the culture and the society as like what we're supposed to look like, right? So as I get older, I decide that I want to be a dietitian, and that was one of the best decisions I've ever made. Yet at the same time, it really was the catalyst for me starting to have really disordered behaviors around food, because I felt like to be a dietitian, I needed to look the part and I needed to act the part. So I would always say that like I had different forms of disordered eating. It never got quite to the spectrum of an active eating disorder, but I did have restrictive binge eating, and I definitely had very disordered views towards foods. I was always on a diet of some sort and switching to a next one. So a lot of chronic dieting. And then I would say the thing that really stuck with me throughout the beginning, just because again, of like becoming a dietitian and feeling like I needed to act and look the part, was orthorexia. So that's the unhealthy obsession with eating healthy. I had that from the get-go. And then again, the dieting kind of came and went throughout about 10 years of my life. So I went to school for, you know, nutrition. I became a dietitian. I moved to Florida after going to Clemson University, where I did my schooling and my RD internship right outside of that area. And when I moved to Florida, I also kind of continued those behaviors, especially as a bride-to-be. I remember being really restrictive with my eating habits, but then binge eating afterwards, because it's, you know, it creates that pendulum. And I felt like, again, as a dietitian, I always felt like I needed to be and look apart. And it always comes back to like, just not really feeling enough as I was. which is so interesting in the work that I do today because it's just changed so much. So obviously, as time has gone on, I started to realize I had disordered behaviors. I realized this beautiful world of intuitive eating and health at every size. I worked on my relationship with orthorexia and really healing my disordered relationship with both food and my body and just myself, you know? And for me, a big part of that journey too with orthorexia and this disordered relationship was I developed IBS and even had SIBO for a period of time throughout my digestive issues. I also had a lot of hormonal imbalances when I got off of birth control after being on it for 12 years. I had a really hard time getting my period back. So I'm so thankful for both the journey I had with my relationship with my body and with food, and also those digestion and hormonal issues I had, because that's actually the exact that work that I do today. That's why I'm incredibly passionate about it, because I find, especially for people with the unhealthy obsession with eating healthy, what we're seeing right now with this health and wellness world is like this very diet-centric approach to the healing modalities and the way that we need to heal. And we're being told you have to eat very specific and rigid ways to heal yourself, right? So I found while I was like trying to heal these things, I got even more orthorexic because I felt like that was the only way to heal. And obviously, as time went on, I realized the exact opposite. Actually, intuitive eating was the best thing for me. And I now can say like I rarely have digestive issues and I have a healthy monthly period and like all these beautiful things that came from healing my relationship with food and becoming an intuitive eater. And now at my virtual private practice, that's the very work that we do now. We specialize in clients who have orthorexia. We do intuitive eating work, digestive work, and hormonal work as well. So long story short, all those things together is the stuff that I'm so, so passionate about.
Yeah, and it's so powerful too because I loved and really identified with what you said before is like when you decided that you wanted to become a dietitian, there's this kind of fear that you have to look and act the part. And I feel like many people in the, let's say, the health and wellness, and even sometimes the medical space as well, but mostly you see this with dietitians, nutritionists, personal trainers, health coaches, everything like that. There kind of is this conception that you have to look, quote, look the part, right? Which like, what even does that mean when we start to examine that? But you feel like you have to look a certain part or no one will take you seriously. No one will believe you. No one will take your advice, right? I mean, there's that common like horrible truth like, oh, well, no one wants to see, a doctor who has cardiovascular disease. Like you would never go to a cardio surgeon who has heart attacks all the time, right? So you wouldn't go to a dietitian or nutritionist who's, you know, in a larger body or has a higher BMI because there must be something wrong with them. Why would I take their advice, right? So there is this kind of fear as going into the dietetics practice or even with personal trainers or nutritionists and stuff like that is like, I have to get there before I can even be taken seriously. And the interesting conundrum that I find with this is many people go into the field of dietetics and nutrition, myself included, because they are so obsessed with food and they want to make it a larger part of their life so that they go into studying this and how to, like you were saying, we're in this era of like a diet-centric approach to healing modalities. And a lot of that is what you learn in dietetics and nutrition school as well. So it just kind of further impounds that belief. And then you've got this, okay, I need to look and act the part as a dietitian. And I'm also already obsessed with food. And it's basically just like a thunderstorm that can lead to orthorexic and disordered eating tendencies for a lot of practitioners as well.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I love that you use the word thunderstorm. It's a great way to describe it. And it's so unfortunate to me because I feel like what we need to do now that like I feel like we've been part of the problem for so long, which is why I really like to show the messy parts of my life, the messy, like the imperfect actions, because what we've created is a society that views perfection as the only way to obtain health and that you have to eat this like very perfect, you know, way of eating and you have to exercise this certain allotted amount of times. And it's so unrealistic. It's so unattainable. It then makes people feel very all or nothing about their health and wellness behaviors. And then two, it's not what true health looks like. Like true health is not about obsession. It's about like your intentions and your mindset and just like living a good life. Like, I don't want to ever promote the message anymore, which I once did. I think we've all like had our own evolutions, right? I never want to promote this idea of like, you have to do exactly what I do to have like this version of health. I'm not interested in that anymore.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, I think it's really important to be honest about that and our past and where we've come from. Like, and because that's a big reason and a big part of the way that we have become who we are today and the way that our philosophies have shaped and changed and evolved over the years, right? Like, we went from a history of whether it was disordered eating or chronic dieting or orthorexia or eating disorders, and then going through this like, food must be the answer to fixing all of this, right? And you kind of, once you become a practitioner, you project that onto your clients. And to a certain extent, like, yeah, food can be really, really healing. But at the same time, you have to acknowledge it can be, when taken to a certain level, can be really harmful as well. And then, as you mentioned, cause a lot of these physiological issues like IBS and hormonal issues and digestive issues and all of those things going down the line, which then if you go back to the food is going to heal everything. Well, in this situation, it's really not, because the controlling and restricting your food and obsessing over your food in the first place is what got you here with these issues.
Absolutely. And I just think it's at this point, and I just feel like we need to get to the place where, and I feel like we're starting this journey, but we need to get to this place where emotional well-being and mental health is like the first way that we take care of ourselves and kind of the way that we look at the healing process. Because without that, like, when you are obsessive, like you were mentioning about your food and your exercise and healing, like, don't you find a lot of times, Dana, a lot of the people who come to you probably like they obsessively research like how they're going to heal. Like, that is not helping you heal. That is doing the exact opposite of that. I feel like reducing your stress and taking care of yourself and taking care of your emotional well-being, that like trumps everything, in my opinion, at this, you know, at this place of where I'm at with the research, but also like my clinical practice. Like, I've never seen a case where like the food fixed everything. So we got to get away from that lens of taking care of people.
Right. Well, it's interesting because that mentality of looking for the answer, kind of the magic pill, the instant gratification, that is diet culture, right? That is taking that mentality that we've learned from all of this marketing that we've received over the years of like, do this diet and it'll fix this. Do this diet and you won't have sugar cravings anymore. You won't have this anymore. Like, it'll heal your cancer. It'll do all of this, right? But when you're taking this more intentional, intuitive, mindful eating, trying to listen to your body and actually honor what it needs approach, you can't bring the diet culture mentality of fix it into this new approach if you truly want to get away from the diet mentality and fixing your relationship with food in your body.
Absolutely. And it's such a diet centric way, just again, put all the blame on the food, because I mean, that's a specific example of what diet culture is. It's very much putting this morality around the food that we're choosing to eat and saying that food is the only answer. And then it creates this situation where you feel like you have to obsess and spend an enormous amount of time and energy in order to have health. And again, that's truly not what health is about at all.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, we're talking about diet culture as a whole, which is pretty overt and people can identify when it's in your face, right? But then there are sneakier ways that this is coming in now, right? With like wellness culture and, you know, with the whole like, this is wellness culture. And yeah, there are great aspects of this where like there are being great discoveries being made with like the research, and like there are certain foods that they've found have a lot of nutrients in them, which can help for certain health conditions and everything like that. But the problem is when we then take this to extremes again, and you say like, oh, acai is going to, you know, fix fill in the blank, or like celery juice every single day is gonna fix your stomach acid and blah, blah, blah. Like everything that you've heard about celery juice, right? Fill in the blank here. But can you talk more about how wellness culture is actually promoting orthorexia and disordered behaviors around food?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a few different things going on with the orthorexia especially coming from this like wellness culture that we live in, I feel like one, we're being told like the messaging is literally all about like eat this, not that, like, right, you need to follow this way of eating, whether it's like taking out foods or doing a food sensitivity testing or doing celery juice or intermittent fasting. Like, it's so putting all the emphasis on food. And to me, that's just one of the pieces of the puzzle of your health. And then two, I really feel like wellness culture still boils down to look like me or look like this perfect version of health in order to obtain health or to look like me. So it's still very much promoting diet culture in the way that it's very disrespectful of body diversity and the simple fact that we all thrive in different types of bodies and sizes. And that is so not the way that the wellness culture sees it, right? I mean, it's very much still, again, about the thin ideal. Like, there's maybe some slight changes happening with that, but we still have a lot of work to do from that lens. And then the third thing I would say too is I really feel like the wellness culture world at this point in time very much emphasizes the obsessive researching that I have a lot of clients come to me like, they had these health issues and they spent an enormous amount of hours spending all this time trying to research all these different things that they should do to fix their health. And that is just, it's causing the obsession and the fixation to happen even more. So it really does, it causes this perfect storm of orthorexia where people are spending all their time, all their money, all their resources, spending their entire life thinking about their health behaviors. And one of the things I talk a lot about with my community and on my podcast is that, you know, health and wellness should be about living your life. You shouldn't be only living to pursue health. Like, your health should give you your life back so that then you can go live a meaningful, joyful life. It shouldn't be about just spending all your time doing that. And if you are, that would be to me an example of something to be reflective about and kind of ask yourself, have some internal dialogue. Like, is this a true health behavior? And another good example, if it's a true health behavior, is if you can't participate in it, do you have stress, anxiety, and worry about that health behavior? Because if you do have stress, anxiety, and worry about not participating in it, that would be another thing to really reflect on. Is this true health? Because that's also a sign of orthorexic tendencies.
Exactly. And I think a big part of that for people, and one, here's like a practical action step that people can do today. This is something that I do with my individual and also group coaching clients, is like, we're talking about pursuing true health, right? And for a lot of people, that requires them to redefine what health is and what health has meant to them in the past. Because so many people associate health just with weight, and they assume that weight is the determining factor of health, and your weight equals, oh, I'm either going to live a long and happy life, or I'm going to be disease ridden. And if I'm in a larger body, then it must mean I'm going to get cardiovascular disease, diabetes, you know, all of these other things that you commonly hear in like the media and medical literature. And they're not talking about correlation versus causation or anything like that. And so redefining, what does health actually mean? What does it look like on a day-to-day basis? Thinking about all of the different systems in your body and all of the different potentially symptoms that you might experience every day and how that might look different in a healthier version of you. And I want you to take weight out of the equation for this, right? Because when a lot of people get stuck on the, oh, well, health equals weight, then if we talk about improving health, quote unquote, then we're just talking about losing weight, right? But if you're trying to improve your relationship with food and improve your relationship with your body, when all you've known before is, okay, I have to deprive, limit, or restrict myself in order to improve my health because my health is my weight, so that means weight loss, and the only way that I know is how to get there, you then need to redefine your version of how you truly see health. Because when I think of health, I think of abundance, I think of radiance, I think of feeling well in my body from the inside out. So, and like, let's be honest here, no one's going to achieve perfect health 100% of the time. And like you were saying, we've created a society in which perfection is the only way to attain health. Nothing is perfect about health, right? Even if your sleep is great, your energy is great, your digestion is great, like maybe your skin's breaking out, or maybe your skin is great, your digestion is great, and you're sleeping like crap, or you know, you have these other mental, emotional health things that are going on, even if many physical things are going seemingly well, right? And so thinking about, what is the whole picture here? How can I figure out and fill in a bunch of different bubbles, a bunch of different examples that I believe are health for me beyond weight, because that's a really big step that can help you move farther along this journey away from these controlling tendencies, disordered tendencies, orthorexic tendencies even.
I really appreciate you saying that, Dana. Both the weight does not equal health, because that is so true and so evidence-based, but also I really appreciate you saying the symptoms, because you're so right. I feel like people get very fixated on their symptoms. It's like, well, no one has perfect health. And again, I think that's why in the health and wellness world, we need to be very mindful of the messages we're sharing and how we're influencing people, because it makes it seem as if you have to have like all these, you know, all these things checked off and always be feeling perfect all the time. And while by all means, wellness and health can make you thrive and feel radiant and all that stuff, at the same time, it's still diet centric if you're coming to it from this, like, well, if I don't feel like perfect in all these areas, then I don't have health, or I'm not doing it right, or I'm upset with the results that I'm having, because it's just not fair, not realistic again. And I would agree with you, Dana. I feel like to me, health is less about like checking things off or like having all these symptoms taken care of. While I definitely want people to get symptom management and get resolution of their healthcare issues, at the same time, I still feel like it comes back to like enjoying and living your life and not being spending so much mental space and capacity thinking about your health or thinking about wellness and thinking about your diet. It's just another way of manifestation of diet culture if you're spending that amount of time, again, in the mental space it's taking to think about all those things.
Yeah, exactly. And then I want to know if this happens to you as well, but I also get a lot of clients who are very research-minded, right? And I also, like, I used to be this way with my own health, and I'm still kind of this way when I'm diving into a new research problem. I'm the kind of person who loves, I have 100 tabs open on my computer and I want to read every single one of them on this one topic before I actually move forward with something. It's like a roadblock that I'm trying to work through, right? But when it comes to a patient or a client's own health, they get a, you know, diagnosis or they're having these symptoms and they're doing endless hours of research. And then you funnel it all down. It's like, okay, it says I should do this diet. It says I should remove these foods. It says I should do this. I have to do this, this, and this. But then the thing is, when you put all of those things together, you're left with almost nothing to eat, or you're left with a list of 100 different things that you should do to fix this health problem or for this diagnosis. And people get so overwhelmed that then they come to me and they're like, I've done all of the research and I know that there are a ton of things that I should be doing, but it's all conflicting. And now I don't know what to do about it. Like, can you make sense of this for me? Because one of the things that tends to happen here is people get so overwhelmed with this nutrition jungle of information that they just kind of throw their hands up and they're like, whatever, I can't do this. This is too much for me to do. Or I've tried this and it didn't work. And it was just so overwhelming for me that I just went back to exactly what I was doing. And this is how I got here in the first place. So I need you to help me work out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like that would be another example of very overt diet culture, because it's such generalized information. And again, to me, it's just looking at such a linear lens of how we can do health. If it's all about just removing foods, then it's not looking at so many other areas of health. And to me, it's also very disrespectful of the mind-body connection. The beauty to me of intuitive eating is that we're reconnecting or rekindling that relationship so that you can then define what feels good in your physical body to eat. Like, I can't tell you that. Your body can give you that information, and that's work that we do to help a client rediscover that. Now, obviously, that you're not going to figure that out immediately, and intuitive eating is definitely like a confusing process to get to the actual place of intuitive eating, but it is possible, and you don't need all these other things to tell you what to do. Like, even within nutrition, I love that gentle nutrition is the way that's described within the intuitive eating principles, because I don't think anything needs to be absolutes, even if we're coming from a place of nutrition research and like how to eat in order to have health or how to eat for specific conditions. I just feel like it's not true to real life. And I just also would say that like, it's not, again, respecting the individuality piece that I think is so, so huge. And yeah, I just feel like we still have a lot of work to do with like how to blend nutrition and the research with the intuitive eating and like helping people figure that out for themselves versus like giving like yes and no's to what to eat.
Right, exactly. So going more down that path, I want to talk about more how eating disorders and disordered eating, orthorexia, all of this whole spectrum of behaviors that involves controlling your food in an attempt to control your body in some way, how it impacts us on like a really deep physiological level. Because what we commonly see is just the weight and the weight loss or gain or the body size and basically like what you can see on a surface level. Until you're a clinician, you really dig deep into it, or until you're someone who's experiencing this. And like you mentioned, you're having all these hormonal issues and the IBS and all these other things, digestive issues. That's way beyond the surface level. And so, of course, we have to address the mental, emotional aspect of this. And depending on the clinician, they want you to address that first, or maybe they want you to address the, you know, behaviors first or whatever it is. But I want to dive more deeply into like what actually can happen to people in the physical body with this spectrum of disordered eating and disordered exercise behaviors even, right? And then what other kinds of imbalances can arise in the physical body as a result of these kinds of behaviors?
I love this question, Dana, because I don't think it's something that we talk about enough, right? So there's so many different things that can happen. I'm sure I won't be able to mention every single one of them. But what I will say, one of the ones I think is really important to understand is when you're having these disordered eating and disordered exercise behaviors, and your mind is also obviously part of that, like we've talked about, but like with that aside, is this really truly affecting your body? You're going into a survival mode when your body is not getting adequate fuel and when you're over exercising. And survival mode is not something that we want, because your body can't be in an optimized like functionality of like mechanisms when that's happening. And when that's why so many people, about 98% of people, experience digestive issues when they have disordered eating, and you know, even the entire spectrum of eating disorders. And that's because their body's in that survival mode. And when your body is just in survival mode, it's going to begin to shut down mechanisms it doesn't see as mandatory to living, like your lungs breathing or your heart pumping, that kind of thing, right? So to your body, reproduction and digestive health are things that it can let go if need be. So your body stops to have the peristalsis contractions, and your body stops to send the enzymes, and it stops to being able to really break down food. And that's why we experience a lot of digestive issues. And that's why we also begin to not have a period when we have disordered eating and over-exercising, because your body sees that as not necessary to living. When we're talking about the survival mode too, you know, something I like to think of is the health and wellness world is so emphasized right now on inflammation, but we have to remember that inadequate intake and being in the survival mode is a direct impact to the inflammation response of the body, and is going to be inflammatory to your body. So that's going to be something that's also going to cause symptoms that you're experiencing and cause the body to be reacting to the disordered eating. Something else too, I think it's really important, is the gut-brain axis, which is how your gut and brain basically talk to each other, one another, via the vagus nerve. And it, you know, I think it's something that we don't give enough credit for, the fact that your gut and brain are talking to one another. So when you have all these negative self-talk, or when you think negatively about the food that you're experiencing, or maybe even getting worried and anxious about, are you going to have symptoms about eating that food? It's directly impacting the way that you're digesting and absorbing the food and the nutrients that you are consuming. And then lastly, the gut-brain axis really should be called the gut-brain microbiome axis, because that's also directly impacted and affected by the microbiome. And if there's like one thing we should all know about digestive health, is like your microbiome in the hundred of trillion of microorganisms within your GI tract, they are so important when it comes to good digestive health. And eating disorders and disordered eating and over-exercising, because of the survival mode and because of this inflammation and because of the impact to the gut-brain axis, that alone is going to be affecting your microbiome and having good digestive health. But also just the fact that you're not eating a ton of food, and you're probably limiting the amount of foods, the food groups that you're eating, and just under-eating too. Like all those things are impacting your microbiome. And when we see all these different things, like, of course you have digestive issues, and of course these manifestations of health issues happen. You know, this isn't something I've talked about a ton, but I even think, because the microbiome is so effective from disordered eating and overexercising, I would love to see some more literature and research on how that's affecting things like eczema and psoriasis and allergies and asthma and all these things that we know are related to the microbiome. But there hasn't been a ton of research on like that triad of like eating disorders, microbiome, and then the other manifestations that happen when we have a not thriving microbiome. So there's definitely a lot of different ways like it physically manifests within your body when we have disordered eating and overexercising.
Yeah, thank you for that. So could you go more into like what are, so we've been talking about this in broad terms, right? It could mess up the microbiome. It could be impacting your inflammation. It could be throwing your body into starvation mode, which I have a couple of podcasts on that. I know Victoria does too, so I can link those in the show notes if you guys want to learn more about that. But what are some of the more specific symptoms or more specific, let's talk digestion and microbiome first, like manifestations that you've seen in clients, whether for like personally with your own clients or in the research with digestive issues related to eating disorders or disordered eating behaviors?
Yeah. So one of the things that we see the most when it comes to digestion is gastroparesis. So that's delayed gastric emptying. And that's usually as a result of delayed gut motility, which is, again, impacted by all those things I was just mentioning, the survival mode, the inflammation, the gut-brain axis, and even the microbiome. So we know that there's delayed gut motility and gastroparesis. So gastroparesis is basically like when people feel like they have like a brick in their stomach and nothing is moving along, especially after mealtime. That would be an example of like what gastroparesis feels like. It's also usually in conjunction with lots of bloating and overall digestive discomfort, pain, gas as well. So that's one of the manifestations. There's also a direct link. I've seen it with clients, but importantly in the research with the microbiome and with IBS, we know that too. And I feel like IBS is very directly related to disordered eating. As far as, again, symptoms would be things like bloating, gas, digestive pain, reflux, excessive burping, and constipation and diarrhea. You know, constipation, I feel like people sometimes they get that because it's like, okay, well, if you're not eating enough, that would make sense. Then it's hard to go to the bathroom then. Or if you're really stressed out, your body starts to, it has a hard time going to the bathroom if it's in a stressed out state. But diarrhea is also really, really common because for some people, their bodies stop going to the bathroom when they have, all this stress on their bodies. But other people, it's like everything goes through them and then they have the diarrhea as a response to that. Or because, again, their microbiome is affected from the disordered eating, so they have diarrhea from that. I think what's also important to understand, because there's this gastroparesis and because there's this delayed gut motility happening, is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is, as it kind of sounds, you have an overgrowth of bacteria in your small intestines. And the research on that is fascinating. I think we're picking up more and more and seeing that SIBO is often, it is what IBS is, because when we get a diagnosis often of IBS, it's basically like a trash can diagnosis, the saying you have all these symptoms, but we don't know why. And we're beginning to understand more and more a lot of those people do have SIBO. So I do think that's another manifestation of it. As far as outside of like the digestive process, like I mentioned, I do think that there's some links with autoimmune and just like the way that the body's responding to the stress. I also feel like the symptoms of brain fog and low energy and fatigue and like all these things, again, that I see so often in the health and wellness world that get blamed on food, I would also say is very much correlated to disordered eating and overexercising. And then from a hormonal point of view, like I mentioned with that survival mode, it makes sense that our body shuts down reproduction whenever we're not going, when we don't have enough fuel to function. So the reproduction gets shut down. What I see most often in my clinical practice is hypothalamic amenorrhea as a result of that.
Yeah, so much to unpack there. And then there's even more we can see as, you know, we start to have all of these digestive issues and then all of the ramifications of, I mean, if you look at if inflammation is being caused in the body and all of these gut issues are being caused in the body as a result of these behaviors, then you can go down the line of, okay, well, what happens to the body when you get something like intestinal permeability or leaky gut, right? And then all of those manifestations can also happen as a result of the downstream effects of disordered eating, orthorexia, eating disorders, these controlling behaviors, everything like that. And then if you look at, you know, talking more on the hormonal piece, there's the hypothalamic amenorrhea where you're either missing your period or it's not happening regularly or it's completely gone, right? And then you can also look at other things like thyroid issues, because one of the main thyroid hormones is converted in the gut. So is serotonin, if we're looking at, you know, anxiety and mood disorders and everything like that. And there are so many things that can happen as a result of these behaviors, which then people may go on medication, they may go on antidepressants, but then it's not actually taking a root cause approach and solving the problem. It's solving the symptoms at kind of a band-aid effect. But if you continue with these behaviors that got you here in the first place, the downstream symptoms that are resulting from these behaviors are not actually going to be fixed in the long term as soon as you go off the medication or off the antidepressants or off the anti-anxiety medication or anything like that.
I so appreciate you saying that, Dana, because I just think it's a beautiful example of the fact that there's so many different health issues that can be stemmed from this disordered eating and overexercising and the way that we treat ourselves ultimately, right? So what I think we as practitioners, you know, whether or not you practice intuitive eating the way we do, like I think we all need to be better about asking questions and really getting to know the behaviors our clients have before we then prescribe, you know, different diagnoses or medications or even just like different health behaviors. Like, right, we need to like get to know what's going on before we then give all these recommendations, because as you can see, there's so many manifestations just from this thing alone.
Right, exactly. And so to all of the clinicians who are listening, or maybe future clinicians, or, you know, people who work with other people, right? So if you take an example of something like a digestive issue, I 100% guarantee you, if not 1,000,000% guarantee you, there is a protocol out there, if not 10 or 15, 20 protocols to fix, quote unquote, whatever that digestive issue is, right? But the problem here is that if in an initial consultation with someone, they're like, oh, I have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, I have candida, I have a parasite overgrowth or bacterial imbalance, any of these things, right? If you don't take the time to really dig deep with your client, like, okay, where did this come from, right? Instead of just, if you go to a doctor's office and you have SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, they might, most of the time, give you an antibiotic. Sometimes they'll give you a diet. Sometimes they'll say, okay, here's your antibiotic and go. Most of the time, it's going to come back. The infection will come back or the overgrowth will come back, because that is, like we said before, the band-aid approach. It's not addressing the root cause of, like, why did you get this in the first place, right? We can think about a parasite or something like that. Many people get parasites when they travel to other countries because of the drinking water isn't clean or whatever it is. Like, maybe there was some cross-contamination with the food. That's where that came from. With many of these other things, we don't really take the time to think about, where did this come from in the first place, right? And a lot of the time, specifically within this lens of we're talking about all of these kind of controlling behaviors around food and restriction and binging and everything that goes along with it, a lot of the time those behaviors and the anxiety and the stress behind those behaviors is causing a lot of these gut issues. So if as a clinician you have someone come in with many of these digestive issues, hormonal issues, whatever it is, if you just give them supplements or herbals or a diet on top of this, you're not fixing why they got this in the first place. So what do you think is going to happen when they ultimately go off that diet? Or if it causes them to binge, if it causes them to further restrict, they're going further down the line here, and you're probably going to see a reoccurrence of the same problems, if not worsening this time, than you did in the first place, because we haven't treated the root cause of the anxiety, the stress around food, around our bodies, around our relationship with food that caused this issue in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And referring specifically to SIBO, you know, you need to take antibiotics if you have SIBO, whether that's herbal antibiotics or you're using traditional antibiotics like Cefaxime with a doctor, you know, that is a really important part of that process. We know that's basically the only way to get rid of it. Yet, that's why I'm such a firm believer in utilizing intuitive eating and healing, like you mentioned, all these other layers of what's going on and really looking at the root cause. So yeah, while you need to get antibiotics from a doctor to make sure that that overgrowth is taken care of, at the same time, really, that's why we do intuitive eating work with digestive health. There's at times where we do a low FODMAP, which is an evidence-based practice for digestive issues. Outside of that, though, we're really just focusing on intuitive eating because it's going to ultimately heal all these other layers of what is going on. So I appreciate you mentioning that as well.
Right. So I want to talk about more how you in your practice, which I assume is the same way that I do, but you know, we'll see. So how we can approach healing these challenges. And let's talk about digestion and hormones in particular, right? So conventional or even like wellness wisdom would have you do an elimination diet because food is medicine and food heals everything. And, you know, many air quotes, as you guys can probably hear around these things, right? But we know that going that route is not going to go well. If you have a history of controlling your food or disordered eating or obsessive exercise or orthorexia or anything like that, that led to these problems in the first place. So what would be your approach to healing with that client with all of this history?
Yeah. So I like to blend different worlds together. Like we do like kind of take parts of the functional medicine model and do that work with clients. So I usually say it's a little bit of functional medicine, lifestyle, and then nutrition and intuitive eating. And let me explain that. So I'm a really big fan of supplementation. I think that if we are going to look at, you know, the quote unquote food is medicine perspective, I think supplementation can be really, really powerful. And it can really, I mean, for some people, it can literally help heal their body. And also in other ways, it can just be temporary relief while they're focusing on the disordered eating healing process. So I really love utilizing supplements. That part is something I really am a big believer in. I also think like if we're looking at holistic healing modalities and going more into the lifestyle choices perspective, I obviously like talking about like emotional well-being and mental health is obviously so important to me. Like that's a huge thing. We are always recommending to our clients having a therapist, looking at things like body work to help the emotions work out through their body, like whether that's massage therapy or acupuncture. We're talking to our clients about breath work and meditation and just basically the way that they live their life, because most of my people come to me are control freaks and perfectionist and very type A personality. So we're really looking at, okay, well, what are the parts of that personality that serve you and what are parts that are making you not enjoy and live your life. So looking at that, and then from the nutrition and intuitive eating piece, really helping people through the principles, helping them figure out where their fears come through, you know, specifically trying food fears. I mean, obviously there's like, that's like a whole conversation of itself is like, how do you specifically help people through the intuitive eating, you know, the healing process. But sometimes we're using meal plans that people are in restrictive nature with their food. And that's how we really look at things from a true like holistic healing perspective, in my opinion. It really looks at both mind, body, and spirit. I do want to mention too, when it comes to hormonal health, it kind of looks at the lifestyle and nutrition piece. But I do want to mention the biggest factors that affect your hormones are food, exercise, sleep, and stress. We call them the big four. And those are really important. Like if you do have an irregular missing period, you need to make sure you're getting adequate sleep and quality sleep, managing your stress, as I just mentioned, and looking at your exercise and your food behaviors. Like they're so important and so critical to really take that seriously, because if you have a missing period, whether it's PCOS or hypothalamic amenorrhea or post birth control syndrome, those big four still matter for all those different manifestations of hormonal imbalances.
Exactly. And combining all of those together, whether it's a digestive approach or hormonal approach, you can't leave anything out. Right, which is why when we were talking about before, if you just do the antibiotics, if you just do the food plan, it's ultimately not going to fix everything, because everything played into getting to where we are in the first place, and you can't only just take one piece of it and fix it. And a big piece of that, when we're looking at specifically with digestion, right, is these fears that we have acquired and reaffirmed around certain foods, right? And so when we're looking at diet culture alone, if we, regardless of digestive issues or any of these chronic health conditions, right, we, speaking for the audience and from myself and probably for you as well, right, but we've all been taught that there are certain foods that are bad, and we have then come to fear them because we binge on them and we believe that they cause weight gain, which we've been taught is the worst thing in the world because appearance equals value and, you know, everything like that. And then, so that's a deep layer in itself. Then we have this other layer of when people do develop these digestive issues, maybe it's as a result of these behaviors of control and disordered eating over the years, or maybe it's, you know, a deeper underlying condition that's a physiological root, right? Then you start to also experience digestive issues because of certain foods. And then there's a double layer of this fear because you've been taught for so long that this is a bad food and you're a bad person if you eat it and you're going to gain weight and you're going to, then you also are associating the symptoms that you experience with that food. So there's like a double layer of fear around those foods. And we know that just the stress and anxiety of even thinking about those foods can then promote digestive issues, whether you're eating the food or not. So how do you start to unpack those fears with people in order to work on the intuitive eating piece of this healing journey?
Yeah, that's such a valid point to make, because I feel like so many people, I'm sure they come to you too, Dana, saying literally that, like, well, I have fear around eating this food and I have symptoms, so therefore I shouldn't eat it, right? Like, if I have symptoms around this food and this food and this food, then that means I just shouldn't eat it, right? Because we're being told, like, symptoms equal, that means that food isn't good for you, or you shouldn't eat it, or that's your body. That would even be like an example of like how you can't be intuitive in the beginning, because oftentimes there are these manifestations happening because your body is coming from this disordered eating relationship, right? When you have all these fear around foods, and we know, as we've been talking about with the gut-brain axis and the microbiome, there's all these reasons then why you're having those symptoms around those foods. So there's a lot of different work that we do to help clients, like through specifically identifying food fears. I mean, we'll have them list out the ones, we'll try them, you know, it's kind of you evaluate, you free yourself, and kind of have to go through that process numerous times in order to really free the third part of it. But we have clients try those fear foods often in a really safe environment. Maybe they're at home, they feel like they have time and space to eat the food. Hopefully a partner that's supportive is around them. Maybe they have a diary or journal nearby that they can write out their emotions about. Or sometimes if you are in person, a lot of times this like food fear trying will be done like in person with that clinician. We're a virtual practice though, so we usually just help clients have and promote like having a safe environment to do it around. Sometimes it's, you know, encouraging them to go for spontaneous food fears. Sometimes, again, it's planning these food fears like into their meal plan. I mentioned that earlier. Oftentimes, because so many people come from a restrictive nature, even with orthorexia, they're really vastly under eating. We're having to utilize stepping stones to get them to the place of intuitive eating. So we do utilize meal plans very often to help people get to the place where they're eating enough. And, you know, honestly, sometimes it's just knowing you're going to have symptoms eating those foods in the beginning. And I think trust and compassion really come into that perspective of trusting that your body will be able to eat this food. Usually it takes numerous times of trying it though before your body can both have the bacteria to consume it, but also just so that your body gets used to eating that food again. And then compassion for the fact that you're not going to feel perfect in the beginning. I think that's oftentimes why people do get very confused and overwhelmed by intuitive eating, is both because it feels so messy and also because you can often have a lot of symptoms with it. But I hope that, you know, by listening to this episode, anyone listening who's resonating with that, you know that like symptoms are unfortunately just a normal part of this process and it will dissipate in time. If it doesn't, or if that's very fearful to you, I just couldn't advocate enough for working with someone one-on-one to help you through that. That's why I think intuitive eating is so often best done working with a healthcare provider, because we can really help you through all that nuance that's going on with the symptoms, with the messiness and all of that. Even the relationship ultimately with yourself and the self-worth and all that stuff that's tied into the value system that you're mentioning, Dana, we can really help you dismantle and work through all of that.
Right, exactly. And this stuff runs so, so deep. So I would recommend for every single person, if you're identifying with a lot of the things that we've been talking about today, you can reach out to me. I'll include the link to reach out to Victoria in the show notes as well if you're interested in learning more about working together. But before we get to telling you everywhere where you can find Victoria, one question that I love to ask my guests could be related to this or maybe unrelated to what we've been talking about. What is a book that you think everyone should read?
Oh, I love this question, Dana. Thank you. I'm actually like an avid book reader, so I really appreciate this.
Same. More readers. I love this.
I love it. I always have at least 5 books I'm reading at any given time. It really annoys my husband. That's kind of just how I do life, though. I'm always like reading a bunch of different things, never like thoroughly going through anything. Anyways, I'll give you 2. One that I think is really phenomenal for the intuitive eating and disordered eating healing process is Eating in the Light of the Moon. Have you read that one, Dana?
Yeah, I do have it. It's great.
Yes, it's a great one. And it's definitely, I feel like it's so unique compared to a lot of the other books out there. Like, by all means, like I recommend and give my clients Body Kindness and Intuitive Eating and all these wonderful books that are out there. But Eating in the Light of the Moon is so unique because it's written by a therapist and it's all based off of like fairy tales and fables. And she uses those as analogies for the recovery process. And I just think it's a really beautiful illustration of the recovery process. So I think if you are resonating with what we're talking about today, you would love that book. And then A personal book that I'm always pulling and rereading is Inward by Young Pablo. It's actually a poetry book. And I don't know, I'm a big like spiritual person into like the idea of raising consciousness. And it's like all about that and your relationship basically with yourself. And I just love that book so much because of that.
Yeah, that's great. I haven't actually heard of the second one, but I love Eating in the Light of the Moon by Anita Johnson. So I will include that in the show notes as well. And then Victoria, thank you so much for being here. Please tell people all of the places they can find you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dana. And Dana, you have to come on my podcast. We'll set that up next.
I would love that.
But you can find me at a few different places. So you can find my personal Instagram account at Victoria Myers _. And then my blog is victoriamyers.net. And then for my virtual private practice, which is becoming an online education center here in this year too, in 2020, is at Nourishing Minds Nutrition and then nourishingmindsnutrition.com. And again, that's where you can find about the services that we provide. And then I also have a podcast called the Nourishing Women Podcast. We air episodes every Tuesday and Friday, probably very similar. So if you like Real Talk with Dana, you'd probably love the Nourishing Women Podcast. And it's all about intuitive eating, holistic healing, hormones, digestion. And we also talk a lot about the concept that my community and I have of wellness without obsession. So how can we pursue wellness, but in a non-obsessive way? So that's all the places you can find me.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.